Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA Studios in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpoga. This evening we'll look back at Africa's half century of independence. What has been achieved? And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's... Are you still a host?
Yes.
Okay, host of Africa's VOA 54. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I was going to say something else, but yeah, that's for another time.
For another time.
For now, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
And also joined by Suleiman Mugula. He joins us from down South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, you're welcome.
I'm pleased to have you as
Thank you very much. As I said, our topic tonight, we are looking at Africa's achievements in the half century after independence, apart from countries like Liberia, Egypt, maybe Ethiopia. The rest of the continent attained their independence almost 50 to 60 years ago in the 50s, 60s, and the 70s. Now, we look at what has changed in governance, social services, peace and security, development. Vincent, general assessment, looking back 50 or so years ago and today, pre-independence and independence time, how do you assess the situation?
If you take away perhaps a few things that have happened in the last 5 years or so, I think Africa was like a child after independence. It was a child that stunted in growth. For many, many years, we've seen the continent, at least the countries that I know well in East Africa, instead of growing and developing, looked like if it wasn't just purely being stunted in its growth, some of them were regressing. You just need to go back and look at the infrastructure. Way back in the 60s and 70s, after the colonial powers left, we had, for example, a railway system across East Africa with a properly functioning kind of trains for both passengers and freight and cargo, all the way from Mombasa to Kampala to Dar es Salaam. We had amazing schools across the region, from high schools, secondary schools, universities, including Makerere, Dar es Salaam, Nairobi University, that used to offer really quality education, and they were respected, the universities of repute. Now, you looked over the years, all those things started to degenerate. The infrastructure started collapsing. Railway system at some point completely died, such that there was no more East Africa railways. There was no more Kenya railways. And then, of course, the roads all broke, kind of collapsed, and you could hardly travel from one place to another. And then, of course, the school system, the hospital systems, and everything that was left in place by the colonial powers started to collapse. And after 50 years, in many places, all those were like derelicts of the past. You looked around and there were like things from the ruins of a past century. So what can you say? I mean, apart from just a few years now that people have started, countries are trying to wake up, and of course with the China making inroads and trying to help this country revive some of those things, especially the infrastructure. I think it was such a shame that for 50 years squandered opportunities.
Suleiman, general observation?
I think Vincent has almost said everything, but what he paints is a very painful picture, which is the reality of the situation, that by independence, many countries were given the foundation to take off. But apart from maybe the first 10 years after independence, from there, they have stunted completely. Actually, we almost have nothing at the moment. Just compare, as Vincent has said, if we are to take the term independence itself, what does independence mean? Independence means to be independent, self-sustaining, autonomous, politically, socially, economically? Are we politically self-sustaining? Have we created the situations of political self-sustenance? Have we created economic self-sustenance? Are we socially self-sustaining? According to what Vincent has said, the continent has collapsed. We don't have anything apart from a few countries. All the systems that were left, which would have been a foundation, all of them were never harnessed. In other words, the leadership which was supposed to harness the, both the human and the and the human and the economic resources have been a disgrace to the continent. Mm-hmm. Because what have they done politically? If we are to analyze them politically, what continent do we have? Independence meant that we are going to have political independence, we are going to have unity in our countries, we are going to have political participation, we are going to have political inclusion, we are going to have elections. Politically, what do we have? After 50 years, we have got Bouteflika being railed in almost an insane person to contest for leadership. We have got Biya being elected for the seventh time. We have got Museveni going 35 years. We have got Equatorial Guinea, Nguema. We have got, all is hopelessness. Apart from a few countries, politically, are people involved? Have we got any political independence as far as concerned? Are the people participating in the in the formulation of policies for their countries? The answer is no. Are there any elections? There are no elections. Do we have any parliament? We have got caricatures of parliaments. People, the leaders who have come of late, they elect themselves and then organize ballot boxes for people to show up. Something like an election. When there is no two elections, the leaders are already there. They are inheriting themselves.
Mm-hmm. Decisions
which are taken in these parliaments, they are not decisions of the people of the cities of the country. They don't even reflect the interests of the cities of the country. They are just the decisions taken reflect the interests of those few who are in leadership. For example, look at the decisions which are taken. Look at Kenya. The pay for the MPs decided by the so-called parliament. Look at the taxes which are passed. Look at the DRC, for example, recently. They are introducing biometric voting machines. The people don't even know what biometric voting machines are concerned, but the government has imported them, and they say the parliaments have approved them. Look at the taxation in Uganda. The mobile taxes, the social media taxes, is that a reflection of the people's interest? Is it in the people's interest or in the government's interest? Look at the removal of term limits. Look at the laws like the public order management laws, which are all over the continent. Are they a reflection of the interest of the people or the reflection of the few people? So I'm only taking the political part of it without coming to the economics. But politically, have we achieved anything? In short, apart from a very few countries, the rest, there is political chaos.
Mm-hmm. Vincent, yes. It is good that he started with the governance issue,
yes,
talking of political independence. In some African countries, it's actually a mockery. He mentioned Paul Biya, 84-year-old Cameroon president, who most of the year is actually not even within the country, who holds a cabinet meeting, I think, once or twice in his five-year term. Is it five or seven? I don't know.
7 years.
Yeah, he holds it once or twice that period. Other leaders who have boasted that for them they are not accountable to the people, they are there for their families and grandchildren. So the ordinary African, does he really see the difference?
Actually, the ordinary African has gotten a raw deal over those years since independence. In many cases, if you ask somebody what has been the benefit of independence, perhaps was just the fact that there was no colonial rule, there was no colonial administrator in their neighborhood. But when it comes to the gains, the practical gains, whether it is economic or political, many have actually gone through almost similar experience. What was colonialism? It was an autocratic kind of rule from an external force, replaced by what? At independence, it was replaced by authoritarian rule by indigenous rulers, and therefore continuation of the oppression of the people, where you have no freedom to speak your mind, where you cannot exercise your freedom to challenge the authority. So it was just a replacement in terms of the political development. So the biggest, I think, source of embarrassment for me, for the African leaders and citizens of Africa, is that there was no effort to build on the foundations that were left by the colonial powers. Mm-hmm. The colonial powers, especially the British colonial power, was actually trying to replicate a little bit of London, of Britain, when they build the cities and when they try to kind of build the infrastructure, because in their mind they thought they're going to have these colonies forever. Mm. So when they left, while colonialism was bad, this would have been actually a good foundation for African countries to build on. Mm-hmm. Why I'm repeating this, Mohola has always said, is because there are so many times I've spoken to African politicians, mm-hmm. and they tell you it took hundreds of years for US to get to where it is. It took hundreds of years for such and such a country to get where it is. Mm-hmm. Africa never needed to take hundreds of years, because mm-hmm. There was already
the
foundation built by the colonialists. Mm. We were not necessarily having to cut through bushes and clear the land in order to build the city of Nairobi. Mm. We didn't have to start imagining how a modern city looks like. Mm. We have a modern city, whether it's London, in New York, it's Berlin. All that needed to be done is planning for the future. Mm-hmm. I lived and grew up in the city of Nairobi, a city that continued growing since after independence, but maintained the same mileage of roads, same space. And over time, you look at the city leaders getting confused about there's so much congestion in this city, so much congestion. The drainage system doesn't work. Mm. Oh, we have 5 million people. Mm. Of course you were going to have an increase in population. Mm. Of course you were going to have more children, and therefore you were going to need more secondary schools, more universities.
Yes.
Why the surprise? Mm. Why after 50 years, nobody ever thought that the population will increase, will need more roads, that there will be need for more parking spaces because there will be more vehicles, people will earn, more money and have more things. It is like there was no vision. Mm. And I think over the, at least nearly over 40-something years, there was no sense of vision for the future. What is our plan for 30 years from now? It is as if things were just going to happen for themselves. Right now you see a lot of scrambling about, we want to build this, we want China to come and help us do this. Where were we in 1970? What did we think our country should look like in 1990, into the year 2000? Was there any plan? Was there an effort to implement any plan for a future of a country where the population would probably triple? Mm. So that, when you look back at that, you feel feel embarrassed. How can you not plan for the future? Mm. How can you not plan for the future?
And at planning for the future aside, even if you look at the law and justice sector, for instance, there are laws that those who fought for independence complained about, fought against, laws like exiling people, internal exile, they would call it in those days. What is called preventive arrests in those days for those Africans who are making noise against the colonialists. These same laws are still on the books in some countries. Some countries have even put more to curtail the people's freedoms and justice. So, Suleiman, as far as law and justice is concerned, maybe there's been one step forward, three steps backwards.
Douglas, everything in Africa, as far as the leadership is concerned, 50 years, as recent as said, it is a shame. You don't even know where to start from. Before I go into law and justice, I wanted to add on what my brother Vincent is saying. The poverty is not even the real poverty. The poverty of ideas, the deficit of leadership which we have on the continent is irritating. It is a shame that we don't even have real leaders, as Vincent has said. People who cannot even ask that within 10 years, what have I achieved? They cannot even make an assessment. What have we achieved within 10 years? What can we achieve within the next 5 years? They don't even ask. They write it down, they read it, but they don't mean it. They don't even understand it. That is why Mugabe on independence, he ended up reading the independence the independence message for the previous year. That is why Mugabe on independence read the independence message for the previous year. You can see that their minds, even their minds, are not there at all. Because, Douglas, Vincent, as Vincent has said, the colonialists left a foundation for us. Each country on the continent had and is endowed with particular resources. There are some which are endowed with good soils and good climate. Ask yourself, if we have taken those agricultural countries, the colonial government left agricultural research centers, left agricultural extension or agricultural support services, left marketing services. Within 50 years, what do we have? We still have rudimentary subsistence agriculture, pest infested. In some cases, the pests have even eaten away the crops. The cash crops, like in Uganda, they had bananas. They were infested. The pests came and ate them as if they didn't even have a government.
Yeah.
Coffee was infested as if they don't even have a government. They don't have a marketing system. You have got countries which have got forests, Gabon, Cameroon. They have cut down all the forests. They don't even have feeder roads to go into those forests.
You know,
50 years, the forests have been cut down.
Yeah. I wanted
to ask yourself, within 50 years, what have you done as far as agriculture is concerned? You have got declaration. We cannot even feed ourselves. Whereas the soils are still there, the land is still there, the people are there, the rain is there, but the governments, all the leaders whom we have had in the last 50 years, Douglas, they need to be packed, for God's sake. All these are rotten leaders, they need to be packed. We need a new dispensation because they have killed the continent. Imagine, they have had Maputo declaration which declaration to give health 10%, agriculture 10%. They don't even give 5%, they give 3%. But what happens? How much are they earning? The parliamentarians are earning. In countries like Uganda, a professor is earning, let's say, about 3 million. A member of parliament or a minister is earning about 30, 15 million, which means almost 20 times. A politician earns 20 times like the highest, most qualified man, a professor in the medical school.
I see. Yeah. So I wanted to.
So as far as if you are to turn any sector, let it be justice, let it be economics, let it be political, let it be social services, people are dying of poverty, the leadership which we have on the continent, this is a very sad story, Douglas. All of them need to pack their bags and go.
I see.
I want to say this. I wish I had an opportunity to collect African leaders in one room. Perhaps I should go to the Africa Union and give an address
there. Of them there.
I think the biggest problem we have had as a continent, and really the most embarrassing and even humiliating, is that over the years, the African leaders will tell you everything is okay. They will tell you the country is doing fine. For example, in Kenya, we had a president for 24 years who convinced Kenyans that the country is doing well. And most times he pointed to the fact that it was peaceful, there was no war like there was in Somalia or South or Sudan or even the DRC. But when you look back, if you were to ask him, what did you achieve for the nation of Kenya? Well, tell us, on your watch, everything that the colonial government left collapsed. When you have a railway system collapse, the airline system collapse, when the country never transformed, when you still have people, children walking to school barefoot, coming out of grass-thirsted, mud-walled houses, going to a classroom that has no door or window, and in some cases actually outside.
Under a tree.
And you're an extremely wealthy man. Your children are extremely wealthy, and they go to school abroad, and they play polo on horses. How do you look at a country and tell the country that 50 years down the line, 25 years of my leadership, this is how best we've done.
Yeah.
How can you tell people that it's okay for a country to be like that decade after decade after decade? I think that sense of being satisfied with very little, where these leaders are just concerned about how well their family is doing and how well their friends are doing, it is the tragedy of the continent. If the African leaders would have had an ambition, a patriotic spirit where you say, I wish all these good things for every single citizen of my country. I want every person in Kenya to have running water, to have electricity, to have good schools, to be able to have three square meals a day. If you would think that way as a leader, and if you're in power for 10, 15 years, 20 years, for heaven's sake, you should be able to do that for your people. Otherwise, what are you there for?
Yes, and as for those joining us, let me remind them that you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing Africa's achievements in the half century after independence. Our panelists are Vincent Makori and Suleiman Mugula. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One. Vincent, you mentioned that. That's very interesting that these leaders don't have a yardstick to know where they are going, where they are coming from.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s, countries in Africa, for example, Kenya, Uganda, they were at par with countries like Singapore, South Korea.
Yeah.
Some of them were even better than those countries.
Exactly. I mean, South Asian countries, some of those were doing worse than some African countries.
Yes.
That is where you get infuriated. Like, how can an African leader proudly brag about how well his country is doing when you look at the South Asian countries and you see them rising from way below where you were and becoming powers to reckon with and becoming industrial countries? No minerals, no gold, diamond, oil, but they can become what they became. What did it take? It took ambitious, patriotic leaders who had a desire to also have their citizens enjoy the same good life that other people are enjoying around the world. How can you stay in a massive palace, drive these limousines, fly in planes and helicopters, and be okay with millions of your citizens living in grass-thatched, mud-walled houses, children walking to school bare feet, and continue telling the world that you're doing well? I feel like those are extremely shameless people, but really they have behaved, as I continue saying, in a more of a mercenary fashion where they behave like they're there to just take.
Yeah, to loot.
Yeah.
And Suleiman, as we wind out...
I wanted to come in.
Yeah, you're going to come in.
I wanted to come in a little.
Okay, go ahead.
If you want to know what Africa has achieved within 50 years, ask President Trump.
President Trump?
You ask Trump. He'll tell you what Africa is. He goes out and calls it. And I think he's right 100%. And he means it. He made two statements. He says he knows it as a place where his friends go to make money and get rich. And the other one, he says, is sort of something, which I will not mention. But I think he's right. Really, Douglas, if you give DRC to a white man, to white people, in 50 years, the wealth in DRC, every citizen in DRC, the government will buy him a car, buy him a house, build him a house, take his children free, and they will even have holidays free. If you give the wealth to white man in Angola, in Equatorial Guinea, they will buy every citizen a car, you give him a house, and they will even have sufficient money to spend every day without working.
I see.
That is where we are.
Yeah, you see,
these are the poorest countries.
Because
if you are given the wealth which these countries have, DRC actually, if you give it to a white man, he can even give other citizens of surrounding countries.
And
he can take about four countries.
And you know,
indeed, the DRC built Belgium.
Mohula, let's say, I mean, there are examples, for example. One just needs to go to Qatar.
Yeah.
What was Qatar few years ago?
Desert.
It's a little desert, kingdom with the tents and camels.
Yes.
It took just leadership to transform the country around and make it what it has become, a tiny, powerful country.
Yeah.
Gaddafi tried to do something.
Emirates,
the same story. Mm. It is nothing to do with, it's not a curse. It is a question of deciding what you want to do. I mean, how do you explain that you can have all these resources in Congo, you can have all this oil in Nigeria, and all this other wealth across the continent, Angola and elsewhere, but the political elite, especially the president, is extremely wealthy.
Yes.
How can he explain to his people that I can be this rich, but you are all very poor, and then keep telling them, it's okay, our country is fine. Equatorial Guinea. What is the population of Equatorial Guinea?
A few million, but
it's not even, I don't know if it's a million.
Not yet.
It is a very small population, hundreds of thousands, and yet the people grovel in grinding poverty.
Yeah, but the president and
the president, his family, and a few people can have a wonderful life in some cities and big hotels where even the citizens of those countries cannot visit. And it is a shame.
And as we're about a minute or so left, what's very annoying to most people is that In spite of all that, these leaders go around begging from the former colonial masters for the little pecks that their country to use in their countries. They beg money for health, money for education. It's very sickening.
It is sickening. And then they look, if you talk to them when they come around here, you try to interview them and challenge them on these things, they want to eat you up. They want to call you a sellout. How dare you say this? Mm. There's corruption everywhere in the world. There is, but here you are in a Western capital coming to beg for money. When you've stolen way more than you can ever be given, how can you face the world and proudly say that everything is okay on the continent? I think it is a shame. And the more people keep accepting that it's okay, that it's okay for an African to continue living in extreme poverty, that to continue walking barefoot. I mean, I see those images.
Yeah.
If you keep saying it's okay, then there is no hope.
Yeah, Mugula, 30 seconds, final thought.
Yes, the third thing is that Africans should know that even at the levels of poverty which we have, the levels of unemployment which we have, we can still turn things around if we get proper leaders. If they cut the expenditures, if we get leaders who are creative, leaders who can harmonize the resources which are still remaining, still we can turn it around. The biggest problem which we have is that the leaders who are there, they have rusted, and they don't even have brains themselves. They have got poverty of ideas. If we get creative leaders, Ouattara has tried to make it in Ivory Coast after the country was almost collapsing. In Senegal, they are trying. In Botswana, they are trying. In South Africa, they are trying. So other countries, they can try. All what is needed is all this generation of 50 years, we need to put it away. Otherwise, can you imagine, Douglas, that up to now, people are still using wood as a source of energy in most of our African countries. And the forests and trees are getting finished. So soon we might have a crisis. We cannot feed ourselves. So we need all these leaders to go away. We have got brilliant Africans. We can change these countries around. We can create employment. We can make good economies. Let them go. Otherwise, they are hopeless and useless. They have spent 50 years for nothing. Africa would be better if we had not had them.
All right. I think we're caught up by time. I was going to ask Vincent about the future, but that's for another day. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54. And Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Jeremy, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yes, and our producer, Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can access this program by going to our main website and scrolling to the Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA.